Answering your tough financial questions for the past 21 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters with co-hosts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean. Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it is about retirement, investments, taxes, or 401ks, Scott Hanson and Pat McLean would like to help you by answering your call. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you're here today as we talk about the world of finance, both myself and my co-host. We are both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays with people like yourself and come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. So glad you are joining us today as we talk about financial matters, trying to help you make some wise choices with your money so you can be at a point in life where work is an option, not an obligation, where you've got enough financial assets to cover yourself for...
Not only that, Scott, but some 50% of the people that leave the workforce do it involuntarily.
I actually saw a study the other day. It said that the people that of the survey, it was over 60% of those they surveyed had retired earlier than they had planned.
And I wonder if that means their primary job, because it doesn't jive with the statistics about how many people actually work in retirement.
Well, that's true. In any case, a lot of the folks that we work with here at Hanson McLean are at retirement age, retirement transition, and so we spend a lot of time here in the program talking about those issues as well. We're going to talk about those, take your calls. We're also going to talk a little bit about the cryptocurrencies and initial coin offerings.
Which
we'll talk more about. And
which are curious. You wonder where... Some points in time, we're gonna talk about
not IPOs, like initial public offerings,
ICOs,
initial coin offerings.
And if you don't know what an initial coin offering is,
you're probably
don't feel ignorant on the subject, because you're probably like most Americans.
But billions of dollars have been invested,
and I think primarily by the people in their 20s and 30s, the little money they have
is evaporated that way.
Yes.
So anyway, we'll talk a bit about it. It is interesting. And, of course, take your calls if you want to be part of the program. The contact number to join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 888-242-6766. And let's start right off in Denver, Colorado with Steve. Steve, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yeah, actually, I'm one of those transitioning older people. I got laid off from my job. And in my 401k, it's just been like in the Prudential and whatever funds they have, because that's all you could do. But now I have options, and I'm just curious what you guys might recommend.
Steve, how old are you?
I'm 60.
Okay.
And you recently, you got laid off, you weren't looking at retiring, and suddenly you found yourself, are you back working now?
No, I got. I was with the company for 30 years. I got a year's severance, so I'm taking a break this summer, and I'll probably be back at work in the fall. Knock on wood.
And are you in a position where you're financially independent, or are you going to need to keep working for a few more years?
I'm going to need to keep working for a few more years, but I don't need to make the rate of income that I did. I bought a house long, long ago. I've got a low mortgage and no debt. And, you know, it was nice to be making what I was making, but I wouldn't be forced to duplicate that kind of income just to maintain, you know, my household and my, you know, expenses and not have to touch anything that I've saved.
Steve, we've certainly seen a lot of people at your stage in life, work for the same company for many years, find themselves a transition, then end up doing something they really enjoy
for longer
than they thought they were going
less
to.
Less money. I was working with a gentleman.
That's the thing. I had the job that I really enjoyed.
Oh.
But it was journalism, and that I'm probably not going to be able to find
Unless you become a thing. Unless you start publishing fake news, apparently there's lots of room for fake news.
Well, there you go.
So,
well, who knows? I've got a lot of time on my hands, so I might try to write a book. Who knows? But you know, like I said, I don't have any pressing issues financially. I'm just curious about with what I have and where it is.
So you've got 1 year severance, so we don't need to worry about any income for a year. Let's say it's a year out from now. Might you need to take some monthly income from this to sustain you? If let's assume you don't have a job a year from now.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Okay. So your question is what to do with this 401k? What's the approximate balance on the 401k?
It's about $190,000.
Okay. And you said that it's in Prudential funds. Is that? And how have you been?
Yeah, whatever. We were locked into Prudential just because that's what our 401k was.
And how did you make the investment selection in there? Did you do it yourself? Did you get guidance from? How comfortable are you in the investment selection?
I did it my own. I'd moved in and out of some stuff, and actually they had one that was called a retirement real estate thing or something, and it's been, I think it's been returning about 7 or 8%. I'm at the age where I'm a little less on the risk in this stuff.
So I've
seen some of the stuff I've seen over the years.
I would recommend one of two things. One, I think what'd be in your best interest is working with a qualified financial advisor, certified financial planner, someone who can help figure out what's the long-term strategy here, then put together a portfolio that's appropriate for you, for your objectives, your risk tolerance, et cetera, and someone who's a fee-based advisor, so that someone who doesn't get compensated by selling your product. I think that would be in your best interest. If you don't want to go that route, then at the secondary, I would just go to one of the discount firms and get a target date retirement fund and let them manage it for you.
Yes.
But I don't think I would leave it in Prudential in some retirement real estate fund.
Yeah, I don't know if that's if it's worth the risk to have a, you know, so if your allocation today, is it 60% stock, 40% bonds, or is it 30% these traded REITs, or what, do you know what that is?
No, I've never looked into that.
Okay. Yeah. Which is why I think you'd benefit.
Details of the thing.
Which is actually why you would probably benefit from an investment advisor. So our recommendation would be to roll it over or at a minimum use a target date fund at a discount broker. I would direct you to our website at hansonmclean.com, and we have a guide there called How to Select a Financial Advisor. And it actually walks you through the steps of choosing a financial advisor. What sort of research do you need to do? How do you understand their compensation? What sort of questions do you need to ask in order to understand how you're going to interact with this person? Because good financial advisors are worth the fee. The problem is the average consumer has a very difficult time telling good from bad.
Yeah.
And that's really what it gets down to is a financial advisor is going to actually give you more handholding. You're going to understand the investments better. It's going to be a little more hands-on than a target date fund, but it's going to be a little bit more expensive. And they may do things like suggest that, I'll ask this question right now. You appear to have money outside your accounts, your IRAs. How much money outside the IRAs do you have?
Oh, no, just about $10,000 in a Roth IRA.
Okay.
I'm just kind of maximizing the 401k getting towards retirement.
Got it. So you don't have any money in savings or a brokerage account or anything like that?
Oh, you know, like maybe another $10,000
okay.
in savings.
What do you owe on your house?
And what do you owe on your home, yeah?
I owe about, I think, $75,000. On a home valued about $350,000.
Right. And what's the interest rate?
3%.
Okay.
Yeah, but it'll be
paid off in about 7 years. So that was another thing.
Oh, good.
And like I said, I don't need a
Just based on just based on this interaction we've had, we think you'd be and it'd be in your best interest to roll us into an IRA and have it professionally managed by a quality financial advisor.
Yeah. And so go to our website, hansonmclain.com, and read the guide, How to Select a Financial Advisor.
I appreciate the call. You know, it's interesting, Pat. The Department of Labor, they were pushing for a fiduciary requirement, which I think would be a good thing.
Which means what, Scott?
That someone has a legal duty to put their client's interest ahead of their own.
Versus a suitability, which completely is always confuses me.
As long as it's good enough for you, I guess.
Yes, whatever suitability means.
So they wanted to make sure that advisors had a legal obligation to put their client's interest ahead of their own. And they focused a lot on fees that people would pay when they moved money outside of a 401k versus leaving it inside of a 401k. But it kind of negated. There are certain people that I think can do fine without a financial advisor, can build their own portfolios, know how to manage it, know how to view risk, know how to build a portfolio to minimize risk in their portfolio, make sure they get compensated for any sort of risk they are taking.
They understand the mechanics of how portfolios are constructed.
Yeah, it's a minority, a smaller percentage of the population.
And Steve doesn't understand the mechanics of how a portfolio should be constructed, nor even his risk tolerance.
Yes.
And the problem with the target date fund, Scott, is you're not going to get a measurement of your risk tolerance.
None whatsoever. They're okay.
But the mere fact that the Department of Labor just said the only thing that matters is fees. Fees are important. Fees are important, but it's not the only thing that matters. Because if the only thing that ever mattered in life was money, then your form of transportation there'd be no market for Mercedes in transportation.
You know, smart car.
Or
whatever, the lowest, most economical car.
Yes.
And you live in the most economical housing possible.
Yeah. And you wouldn't
have
cable.
Eat the most economical food.
And you wouldn't have cable television.
You would not have cable television. No.
Why don't I go
money
there?
Was the most important thing.
Yes.
Correct.
So for many, it makes sense for it. It depends on who you are and how well you
can
actually manage.
But that guide that we've got on selecting a financial advisor, I think it's helpful for folks.
It's going to keep you away from bad people.
Yep. 1-888-2-HANSON to join Hanson McLean's Money Matters. 1-888-2-HANSON. We're talking to Rory in Carson City, Nevada. Rory, you're with Hanson McLean.
Afternoon, Pat and Scott.
Hi, Rory.
Hi, Rory. I'm going to be in Carson City a couple weeks from now. We'd love to go bicycle riding in the backside of the Sierras. Anyway.
You know what? I live on the backside of Sierras where all the pine trees bears.
Yeah.
It's beautiful up here.
Right out to Genoa.
Doesn't it get windy out there?
Only in the summer, it feels like a convection oven.
With the heat and the wind. Other than that, it's beautiful.
It's beautiful.
I live up at 5,500, so it's fairly cool, but it's windy all year round here.
Were you from California originally, Roy? Left the state for tax reasons?
I retired in Sacramento about 8 years ago and then moved up here.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Every day, people are retirees are leaving the state of California.
Yeah.
How can we help you?
Well, I can give you a rundown of my financial status. Maybe that would help. But
sure. Fire away.
Okay. My fixed income, retirement income is $100,000 a year. And I got about $400 in my 457, my house, my plane. Are paid for. I've got about $30,000 in metals and about $80,000 in cash. And
now you live in Nevada. When you say $80,000 in cash, do you mean like cash,
or is it in a bank account?
In the checking and savings account.
Okay.
And
the $100,000 in income, does that come from Social Security and pension, defined benefit pension plan?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All righty. Keep talking.
And, you know, I'm 69. I'm going to start my 451 in, a year and a half. And the question is, I don't need the money. I don't owe anything on anything.
Yeah, your plane's paid off.
I think that's the first time. We've been doing this program how many years? The first time someone going through their assets and my plane's paid off.
My plane isn't even paid off. Well, due to the fact I don't own one, makes it easier. But...
Don't own one. They're expensive. Rent one if you have to.
Yes.
But when I start taking my distribution from the 457, are there any instruments or something that I might have missed somewhere, but I can take that income because I don't need it and make it tax deferred somewhere, you know, bonds or something?
Well, coming out of the 457, it's going to become a taxable event unless you give those dollars to a charity.
That's the only way to avoid
that's
the tax.
The only
actually,
way.
It's still taxable. It just would slip, pretty much negate the tax. So you're going to have to take out, it starts at about 3.5% when you first get started. So, you know, 12 grand, 14, let's call it 15 grand is going to have to come out the first year. Now, what some people in your situation do, Rory, is they'll take the money out, pay the taxes, because you got to pay the taxes, and then turn around and invest those dollars for the long term and look at it at a tax-efficient manner. The nice thing about money in 457s or 401ks or IRAs, there's no tax considerations when we make changes. So you can invest in really whatever, and you can say, you know, I feel like reallocating. You can reallocate it. Never triggers a taxable event. Not true with money outside of retirement accounts. But considering that the bulk of your finances are in tax-deferred accounts, what if it were me, what I would probably do, take the money out because you got to take it out. I would probably invest in either an S&P 500 index fund or a total stock market index fund.
Exactly. And Rory, where is
the reason for that? Let me explain the reasoning behind that. Most of the return will come from capital appreciation. You'll get a little bit of dividend off it. But let's assume that over the next 10 to 20 years that the economy continues to grow and the stock market advances like it has the last 100 years or whatever. And historically, you figured 9 or 10% over the long term on this. That capital gain, if you choose to sell it in the future, is taxed at a favorable rate. And if you never spend it and you end up dying with it, whatever gain you've accumulated is forgiven when we have what's called a stepped-up basis upon our death. So
under current tax law.
Under current tax law. So it's
so it acts as kind of a tax deferred vehicle. It's going to spin off a little bit of taxes, but not much. So that's what.
So when it goes into my estate, then when I die, it's not taxed.
That's correct.
That's correct.
It receives a full step up in basis, which means any of the gain that took place from the date of purchase to the date that you died, or that the date that you died is there's no gain. Gain tax. None of that gain is taxed.
That's right. It's called a stepped up basis.
All right. So I have a question for you though, Rory. What? It's a 457 plan. So technically, a 457 plan is an asset of the issuing organization or municipality. So technically, it could be at risk in bankruptcy. Now, I've only seen it once or twice in my whole career, but I have seen it. How stable is that municipality that the 457 is issued in? Because if it's a little water district with three employees or a sewer district, I would worry. If it's the state of California, I would not worry as much.
It's state of California.
Okay. So,
but if it were you, Pat, you'd probably have it in an IRA.
I would absolutely have it in an IRA, because why bother?
The same portfolio and have more flexibility.
Yeah, if you understand, if you could build a portfolio for yourself and you're comfortable with that, the only thing the 457 has done for you is it has screened a series of investments that have gone through their screen that they're comfortable with, and then you get to pick from their menu. Where if you move it into an IRA, the world is your menu, primarily of investment vehicles, and you've mitigated that risk of having a 457. So that's how I would do it. Does it matter? Yeah, probably, you know, not much.
But I'd look at the requirement of distribution. If you don't want to spend it, I'd look at either S&P 500 index or a total stock market index. So appreciate the call, Rory. Wish you well on that. Let's continue on with Hanson McLean's Money Matters. 1-888-2 Hanson. We're talking with Gene. Gene, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yes. Hello.
Hi, Gene.
Yes. I had a basic question, I guess, on whether or not I have to worry exceedingly about enhancing any return I have in a 457 plan. It's just pretty much been sitting in with a stable value fund, not getting much return the last number of years. And I know the market is pretty overvalued perhaps now, and this may not be the time to edge into that a little bit. I'm 70 years old now.
Okay. We should stop for a second and define the word exceedingly. So you said you should you worry exceedingly right. about
there,
this.
There was a couple strong actions. That was one, and also yeah. being the market overvalued.
And the market overvalued. So let's go back to Gene, and we'll try to answer this question, because it all kind of hinges on those two words. Why, you're 70, are you taking any income from this 457 above and beyond the required minimum distribution?
Well, this year I will have to take my first one.
Okay.
And it seems like I've heard you in past shows, maybe, I'm not certain of this, that if you can live reasonably comfortably with what you have now, don't stress, at least at the age I am, in trying to enhance return if you're able to live reasonably well with this.
I would agree with
so
that.
So
do you have a pension? Because if you got a 457, you worked for a municipality of some sort. Do you have any monthly pension?
Yes. I have a pension of about $5,000 a month and about $335 in this 457.
And you've never taken income from it? Never so far?
No, and I've been retired about 10 years or so.
And what's the interest rate it pays?
I think in that stable value, I think it's today, the last year, maybe 2 or 3, not much more than about 1%, I believe.
How long have you had it?
Gene,
how long have you had it in the stable value?
Forever.
Since around the crash, actually.
What crash?
I got out mostly before the 2008 debacle there, but so I had a little in the market at that point, and I think I just completely edged out. Fortunately, I got out mostly before that, and it's been in there for quite a while.
You don't need this income?
No.
You do have about what?
Well, I mean, I need it. I guess I need it for trips and things. I have a son that I will need to put through a couple years at UC, but I have that money outside the 457, about $40,000-$45,000, which should cover that. So I can live on that pension reasonably well. I do have a mortgage of a couple hundred thousand, so it's not like there are no expenses.
So it's an interesting situation.
Live.
So here's some money that you've not taken any income on since you've been retired. You've got a nice pension, and you have low risk tolerance, obviously. That's why you've been in this plan. The challenge is you've watched this. The income has been so low when interest rates are low that maybe it's kind of prompting you to do something. But the fact that our concern... my concern, if I said, Gene, I want you to allocate 30% towards the stock market. Let's just say, throw that out there. It could be 30% anywhere for that matter, but 30% towards the stock market. My concern is that the first time the stock market declines 10 or 15%, it's going to drive you nuts.
Yes.
And cause anxiety in your life. And if the market falls 30%, you might just say, this is a bad idea. I shouldn't have listened to that. Should have never called that radio program. And I'm moving out.
You're exceedingly worried over not making money. I'd worry about you exceedingly worry about losing money.
What would happen if it went down?
So here's what I would look at. What's the interest rate on your mortgage?
And right or wrong investment. It's what's right for you.
What's the interest rate on your mortgage?
Right. I think it's about 3.875.
And how much time is left on the mortgage?
Quite a lot, because I refinanced at 30 just within the last 5 years.
Perfect. I mean, if this wasn't in the 457, it was a cash, it would say pay off the mortgage. But you got this tax, man, you got to pay.
I wouldn't do a thing. The only thing I would make the recommendation to see if you can get that kid to pay for his own college education. Otherwise, wouldn't change a thing. Wouldn't mess with it.
Yeah.
Would not mess with it.
And I know, you know what? Here's the funny thing. Right now, there's going to be some other listeners cringing. Someone pulling out the hair, I probably wouldn't be surprised if I get an email saying what bad advice that is.
I read these things on the blogs. Like, who are these advisors telling people that they shouldn't be in equities? You're not Gene.
Yeah.
There's nothing. Listen.
And we've had 25 years of sitting across the table from Gene's over the years in the downturns.
You might criticize our advice to Gene, and you might even criticize Gene, but I'm telling you what. Gene's pretty darn happy.
Gene's got a pension of
$5,000 a month. Probably has a little bit of Social Security income. Decent health.
Yeah.
It's Gene's risk tolerance. It's not yours.
What the right investment is what's right for you, Gene. I think that I'd just stick with this about.
Yeah, I wouldn't change a thing, Gene.
Yeah, glad
wouldn't
you called, Gene. And have a great rest of the weekend. Well, we're up against the clock. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of this cryptocurrency, Bitcoin type stuff, and initial coin offerings and what you need to do to make sure that you don't get taken advantage of some of these things. So 1-888-2-HANSON to join Hanson McLean's Money Matters. We'll be right back.
Want more of Hanson McLean's Money Matters? Visit HansonMcLean.com/radio to get the Money Matters podcast.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Thanks for being part of our program today as we talk about financial matters. And if you want to join the program, 1-888-2-HANSON is the number to be part of the show, and would love to take your call, answer your question.
Before the break, we talked a little bit about these initial coin offerings. I find it fascinating.
The first time I heard it, I like, what the heck is this?
But
A couple years ago, I heard the first of it.
And the reason I find this fascinating is because these sort of pump and dumps or Ponzi schemes slash assets that are murky. You see them every 10, 12 years. They appear in different forms or fashions.
Well, you see them all the time. You just see a cluster of them when there's something new out there.
Yes.
And so most of us are familiar with initial public offerings. This is when a company wants to raise some additional capital, typically, or the founders want to cash out. And they go to the public markets by selling their stock to the general public. The IPO, Facebook, for example, had an IPO a few years back, and I think it was primarily not really to raise capital as much as providing some liquidity for some of the employees. They did raise some capital, but so, now it's a publicly traded company.
And so when you talk about an initial public offering, Mark Zuckerberg at Facebook retained a lot of those shares of stocks for himself.
Yes.
He probably sold quite a bit. But he retained quite a bit.
Majority, yeah.
So when you see Mark Zuckerberg being listed as a billionaire, the reason is that stock goes up, he has the ability to sell more of that into the public markets if he wishes.
A public market. And when the company goes public, there's a lot of regulatory filings to go through, regulatory burdens. There's all kinds of check the box. As a matter of fact, it's become much more difficult for companies to go public. So we're seeing less and less companies go public today than we did, say, 20 years ago.
And back to Mark Zuckerberg, if he has to file a plan of when he plans to sell his stock in the future. And once he sells the stock, it is public disclosure. So
you know exactly what's going on with the insiders.
Correct.
All the executives. They can't just sell their stock willy-nilly.
So if tomorrow Mark Zuckerberg sold all of his Facebook stock, all of it, or even half of it, of his own personal Facebook, the stock would react, the markets would react to that.
Yes, quite dramatically, I would imagine.
Right?
Yes.
So why do we bring up an initial public offering with an initial coin offer? Why are we making a comparison?
Further, they have to, public companies need to file reports periodically, 10-Ks, et cetera, that list out dealings. They have to do annual reports to the shareholders.
They're
that explain
audited?
They have to disclose all kinds of things. They have to have audits. It's a lot of things for transparency. So investors say, this is what's going on. And there's so much for transparency that a lot of companies say, we can't bother going down that route because it's just so burdensome. So what on with Bitcoin? Some's out there, and then we had some other copycat type
Ethereum
currencies, where it's a currency to buy something in the future. Companies started raising money by saying, you know, instead of going to the public markets, let's issue coins. We'll create our own coin, and we'll sell coins. And because we're selling coins, we're not selling shares of our company. We're just selling coins.
Which are what?
It's not regulated.
What are coins?
Whatever you want them to be. They're in. It's a digital coin. So these companies just essentially make up their own coin and say, we're going to raise money by selling coins.
So I might.
So they're not a public company. So the Securities and Exchange Commission hasn't.
So I'm a private company and I'm manufacturing, I don't know, rubber ducks. And I'm like, I need.
There's a big market for rubber ducks, by the way.
I need more capital in order to grow. I need more machines. I need more designers for my rubber ducks.
The cost of rubber's gone up.
I need more capital in order to grow.
Yes.
And rather than go to the public markets, I decide I'm going to come out with my own coin called the Ducky.
Yes, you could do that.
And I'm going to issue this coin called the Ducky.
Yep.
And I'm going to just set a value on it.
And let's say Pat issues the coin called the Ducky.
The Ducky.
I, Scott, as an investor, can choose to buy that coin if I choose. I will buy that coin. And when I buy the coin, I'm buying it from Pat. So Pat gets the money. Now I have this Ducky coin that at some point in the future, Pat has promised me, he's such a good guy, Pat has promised me that I could sell that coin back to him in the future for something.
Maybe.
Maybe cash, maybe some other piece of the company, maybe some supply of ducks.
I might pay it in ducks. I mean, rubber ducks.
Yes.
So your Ducky might be payable in ducks.
Now, what we're discussing here is exactly the kind of thing that's been happening with these initial coin offerings, except for most of these weren't actual businesses that were manufacturing things. Some were great ideas by bright young engineers and whatnot. Others were just
flat out scams.
Total scams.
Right? And so what happens is, let's say I issued these ducks and I issued $1 million worth of ducks, a million duckies, that's the name of my coin, at $1 a piece. But I only sold 500,000 of them into the public markets. And the next thing you know, the price goes to $3 a ducky, which in comparison, or $4 a ducky. I might decide to start dumping the rest of my duckies in the public markets as the price goes up, to the point that I sell all my duckies out and I'm just out. And the coin that I actually created, it trades among whoever bought the duckies. That's what happens. It's a bizarre concept.
And we talked about these a few months ago. There was one, I forget which company it was, that were valued over $1 billion because the guy changed the name to a currency, sounded like a currency company, and that was a publicly traded company. These are initial coin offerings. And so it's come under the radar. When a company goes public, we brought up Facebook, Zuckerberg. When they were going public, they couldn't make up a bunch of false claims.
Because they're regulated.
But the initial coin offerings, just about anything you want. So a couple of weeks ago, the Wall Street Journal did some in-depth analysis of these companies that have done digital coin offerings, initial coin offerings. They looked at over 1,450 of these offerings, 1,450 companies. They found red flags with 271 of them.
So almost
20%.
Yeah.
Roughly 20%. 1 out of 5. Figure just some of them are just outright scams. Some of these, the pictures on their websites are made up photos. They're photos, stock photos they took from other places. They're not even their real people.
But someone bought the coins.
In one case here, Dinaro, online payment project. Jeremy Boker. Jeremy Boker doesn't exist. They raised $8.3 million from investors. Mr. Boker's image was a stock photo from some guy out of Poland. Someone's Facebook page or something from Poland. They've been over $1 billion in those 271 coin offerings that the Wall Street Journal found red flags. $1 billion.
This is
since 2017. just since 2017, right? Since the end of last year, crypto coin offerings have generated more than $9 billion in proceeds around the globe, according to a Satis
group. It's a strange thing, isn't it, Scott?
We'll eventually see a 60 Minutes thing on this, I think, or something along those lines, because there's going to be a lot of people that have been swindled into this.
Yep.
It's just
a 60 Minutes thing.
It's a license to steal.
You know, so speaking of 60 Minutes, a number of weeks ago, there was a piece on Theranos, right? The blood.
Theranos, yeah. How do you pronounce that? I've never seen any. There's 60 Minutes had a piece on it. Wall Street Journal's been doing a great job.
Oh, so I read that.
Destroying.
So a gentleman from the Wall Street Journal wrote a book called Bad Blood, and I read it, and it's great.
Elizabeth Holmes.
About Elizabeth Holmes. And how do you say Theranos? It means therapy and diagnosis. That's how the name came up, Theranos.
Okay.
But
we're
anyway,
really off topic here at Hanson.
Great. I'm going to just tell you, it was a great book. It's called Bad Blood.
That was it?
That was all I wanted to say. I was plugging this guy's book. And I thought it was interesting.
But another scam.
I thought it was so interesting.
They were a publicly traded company.
How much, and it never went public.
Correct. I'm sorry.
How much private equity went into it from
smart
otherwise
people.
Really smart, smart people?
Well, your point there, Pat, and I think what's fascinating about that, you know, as investment advisors, we study a lot on behavioral finance, behavioral economics, what drives people to make decisions. How is it that someone wealthy will make $100 million investment without doing basic due diligence?
Because they assume the next guy, their friend, did the due diligence. And that's how it happened.
Everyone else is doing it. These other smart people are doing it. If it's good enough for them, it must be good enough for me.
Yeah.
If they know what they're doing, it must be good enough for me.
Well, Safeway invested, Walgreens. I mean, it was amazing.
The deals that they put together. And it was all...
It was all
made
smoke
up.
And mirrors.
Yep.
They had the machines, but the machines didn't work.
It's supposed to be you just take a little blood, drop out of blood, and they can do all.
For, yeah. Yeah. Never.
Instead of the 12 vials that you have to give on your annual physical or whatever.
Never. It was all smoke and mirrors.
Last time I got a physical, I thought they were bleeding me out like they did in the old days. They needed so much blood for the.
Did the guy use a leech, though? The old days, they used leeches.
They did use leeches.
Yeah.
Actually, you know that they still use leeches in medicine today? I was on a ski trip with a brain surgeon.
Okay.
They use leeches sometimes on, he was telling about some case they use leeches still today. Oh, he started going off on leeches. I thought he was joking. He was not joking.
All right. Well, I'm not getting anywhere. If I need brain surgery, I'm not using that guy.
Yeah. All right. We're Hanson McLean's Money Matters. We're off topic. If you want to join the program, 1-888-2-HANS. But to your point on this, just because someone you respect that you think's bright is making an investment decision does not mean that you should just march forward on that.
Do your own due diligence.
And we see that not just in investments, but...
The best investors are cynical.
You know, it's interesting. So I do some backcountry skiing. I've taken some avalanche training courses. The biggest danger is actually not when an experienced person is out solo. It's when there's a group of experienced people, and they all think that if it's safe enough for John, I mean, he's such an... experienced person, it must be okay.
Yeah.
And people, they take down their own guard to doing their own risk assessment, figuring that the other, if it's good enough for this guy, it's good enough for me.
That makes sense.
That's how the worst avalanche disasters happen. It's when a bunch of really smart people, the people that should know better.
Follow.
They follow each
smart
other.
Smart people.
They're all following each other. 1-888-2-HANSON to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters. We're in Lincoln talking with Glenn. Glenn, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, how you doing? I listen to your show quite a lot on Saturdays.
Great. Glad you are, Glenn.
Also available on podcast.
Okay.
How can we help you?
So my question is, I'm 49 years old. I'm just now thinking about retirement, mainly, you know, probably should have earlier. So my question is, what's my chances of having a retirement being 49 years old?
So... It depends because most of what will determine whether you can retire comfortably or not has probably more to do with the amount of debt and lifestyle going into retirement than asset. Because if So I've been to, I visited, my son lived in Ecuador for a little while, and I went and visited him, and he brought me to this town that was filled with American retirees. And he called it, he said, this is known in Ecuador as Gringoville.
Gringoville.
Okay.
And people retire there on their Social Security and not much more, if anything more. And they live comfortable lives. They're able to buy.
And they use the dollar system, so you don't have to worry about currency fluctuation.
Medical care is good. Food is inexpensive. But the what they've done is, the people that move there, is they've actually made their lifestyle fit their income. So when you say, what are the chances? My recommendation to you, Glenn, is to learn how to speak Spanish now.
There you go.
I'm joking.
So, all right, real quick. So, Glenn, are you married with kids?
Yes.
How old are your kids?
Four kids, 17, 16, 15, and 13.
Wow.
Okay, so you're in high expenditure years and probably going to be a little worse coming up, right?
Yeah.
It's amazing how expensive kids continue to get.
And how much do you owe on your, do you own a home?
No, we owe, I owe $300,000. It's worth $550,000.
And what's the interest rate on it?
I'm paying about 4%.
And what's your income?
4.5%. Well, before tax, $135,000. After tax, after I pay taxes, because I'm self-employed, I end up with about $115,000.
Does your wife work outside of the home?
No.
And have you saved anything towards your retirement yet?
Well, right now I've got, last year I just started putting the $5,500 maximum for me and for my wife in the IRA. And I have some money in savings. I've got $175,000, but $100,000 of that I need for business, you know, operating my business cash flow. So I've got $175,000 saved up. And
could you save any more?
$100,000 in an IRA. Yeah, I could save a couple $1,000s a month.
Oh, you can?
Put into a retirement savings, yes.
Okay, so here's what you should do. And you said you made those contributions into a Roth IRA or a regular IRA?
I would do regular.
I believe it's a regular IRA. Okay.
All right, so here's what you should do is you should actually open up what's called a Unique.
Do you have any employees?
Yes.
How many?
Two.
Are they full-time?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't do the Unique then.
Yeah, you could do a SEP IRA, but then you have to contribute to them.
Yeah,
so you
wouldn't
can do
that.
You can, and beginning next year, you'll be 50. You can do another 65. So you can do half your money into these IRAs.
And I'd buy the S&P 500 with the other half.
An S&P 500 or a total stock market index fund.
Yep. So I would actually open up at a discount brokerage.
And set it up so you've got $2,000 a month going into savings every month. And the challenges you're going to have these kids coming up for college. Look, both myself and Pat worked through college. I went to junior college for a couple of years. Actually, it took me 4 years to get through junior college. Full disclosure here.
Well, you owned a business in college, in junior college, did you not?
It was a small business that I scrapped together, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, correct. Yeah. And
you trimmed trees.
I trimmed trees. And so there's this kind of mindset out there that kids got to go away to college and live in the dorm. And I see families jeopardize their own financial future. I see no evidence that that's going to make the person either more employable in the future, have a better character in the future. I mean, I don't quite know if there's that correlation.
Yeah, I think that might be a negative. Yeah. I had a friend told me that his son dropped out of college because his alcohol level was higher than his GPA.
Well, our daughter now is going to be going to a junior college.
Yeah, well, don't feel bad about that.
Yeah, and live at home. There's nothing wrong with that. So your situation here, go to a discount brokerage, open up a monthly, what they call periodic investment program, put $2,000 a month that comes right out of your checking account into a brokerage account, and you're going to buy the total market.
Well, half can go into the IRA.
But he said he can afford to save another $2,000 a month.
Yes. Yeah.
In addition to the $13,000 you're putting into the IRAs.
If you can get down 15 years out to a point where your kids are out, you're no longer supporting them, that's going to be your choice at some point in time. you're no longer supporting them. Your costs, the majority of your money right now is going to pay for the family, right? That's reality.
But you've got plenty of time. You've got 15 years.
Kids are gone. Either you're in your house that you're in now that you have paid off by then, or you're downsized to something else that's paid off. You end up with some money saved aside. You'll be fine. The key, but you don't want to wait another 5 years.
Yeah, you want to start as soon as possible.
Yeah.
All right.
All righty.
What about an ETF?
Yeah, well, you could.
The challenge is ETFs trade like stocks. So you put the money into your brokerage account, then you have to trigger a trade every month. An ETF is, it's a mutual fund.
You could buy an ETF exchange traded fund.
They don't work great on
total market. You could buy it, or you could buy the total market and a mutual fund, and the cost will be almost the same. In fact, sometimes the mutual funds are less expensive than the ETFs, and sometimes they're not for the same underlying index. So don't get caught up in the word ETF. What we're looking at is the underlying investment. So that's why we use the total market, and I would just go to a discount broker. All righty?
Okay.
All right, Ken. Keep up the great work.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
No question. And it's never too late to start saving for retirement.
I had at one point in time, not too long ago, 5 years ago, a 17, 16-year-old, 15, and 13-year-old.
All right. You're listening to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. This is the time in our program we're going to switch to real advice. And when we do our real advice segment, we talk with one of our financial advisors and hear about a situation they've been working with a real life client. But we want you to keep in mind that the experience that this client had with the organization may be different than any experience that you might have with the organization. And we've got Justin Wilson joining us. Justin is a certified financial planner professional. He's also a certified fund specialist, over 14 years in this space. He's been with Hanson McLean Advisors for roughly 10 years. So, Justin, thanks for being part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Scott and Pat. How are you guys doing today?
Never better. So tell us about the situation you were dealing with.
Sure. So this one was actually a fairly complex case. A gentleman came in to us after attending our Social Security planning workshops, and he owned his own business in a couple different forms. He had a C-Corp that he was the only employee of, and then he also had an S-Corp that had several employees. And so he was looking to unwind the S-Corp.
Were these different industries?
Same industry, just established at different times. Couldn't get out of him why it was set up that way, but that's the way it was set up. And so he was unwinding the S-Corp as he no longer wanted to have any employees and just have the C-Corp. He had a very large balance in retained earnings inside the C-Corp, and we're trying to figure out ways for him to get that out without paying a ton in taxes.
Yep.
So he had issues with that. He had some after-tax accounts that had very, very large capital gain tax liability inside of it, obviously tax issues. And then he really wanted to look at distribution planning. He unwinds the S-Corp, basically wants to keep the C-Corp for the next 3 or 4 years and then retire. And so we had to come up with several different ideas on how to accomplish this. And there were a few different things we were looking at. So when it came to the C-Corp and the retained earnings, as he was the only employee, we looked at potentially setting up a defined benefit pension plan, and then funding that with the retained earnings, as well as establishing a solo 401k and maxing out not only his contributions, but matching contributions and profit-sharing contributions.
How much would you be able to funnel away in 1 year that way?
So for him, it would have been $61,000 into the 401k as he was over 50. And then we're looking at a couple $100,000 into the defined benefit plan.
Interesting. Yep.
And so that was going to allow us to get the majority of that money out without losing a lot of it in taxes, and then just have it taxed as he pulls it out for income in retirement.
Justin, did he have a defined benefit plan when you met him?
He did not.
Isn't that funny that he had an S-Corp and a C-Corp? Anyway, that's really curious. And he didn't have a defined
benefit. He's probably busy in his own trade and didn't take the time to deal with these issues.
Okay.
Exactly.
So you were able to get couple, almost $300,000 out of the C corporation and into some sort of a qualified plan.
Correct.
With the help of his, with the help of a pension planner, pension administrator, and a CPA, I assume, correct?
Correct, correct. So we utilized a third-party administrator, obviously, for the defined benefit plan and worked hand-in-hand with his CPA so that we could maximize each year how much we can put into the defined benefit plan. And then, obviously, the 401k, the solo 401k, that was merely, you know, an afterthought to try and get more money out sooner so that he could retire sooner rather than later.
Was that his objective, to retire?
It is. It is. Yeah.
Where his business
been doing the same thing for 45 years and worn out.
Were the businesses worth anything without him? Was there much goodwill to sell?
There actually was not only goodwill to sell, but then there was also land involved. And so that was another part of the planning process, was how does he sell this to one of the gentlemen that was a part of the S Corp who wanted to buy it from him without taking the tax hit all in one calendar year. And so he was working with his CPA on setting up a structured sale of the business.
Yep.
So that he starts to realize that a couple years down the road after retirement. And part of the reason we wanted to do that was, like I said earlier, he had a very large capital gain tax liability in an after-tax account, and we wanted to have his earned income or income be next to zero for a couple years so that we could try and reduce the amount in capital gains taxation he would pay.
That makes sense.
So keeping him below the 15% tax bracket so that he could pay basically zero in tax to the federal government and then just pay what he would owe to the state. And so we were looking to structure the sale 2 or 3 years after retirement so we could utilize those after-tax savings with the very large capital gain first few years and get out of it.
So at the end of the day, he came to us with a problem, and you said, here are some possible solutions, and you brought in professionals from the pension side and his accounting side and said,
work as a team
in order to solve this. And this is one of these examples where you say, well, the rich people get all the breaks. Well, in this one, he did.
Correct.
I don't think he would not identify himself as a rich person.
That
I
is
guess.
Correct. Probably hardworking. Yeah. Ended up with assets that he accumulated and needed to extract himself.
Would that be true?
As most cost efficiently
as possible.
44
years and
Fair enough.
Absolutely true.
I bet he doesn't drive a BMW or a Mercedes.
So.
No, I believe that the truck he drives is 22 years old.
Yeah,
perfect.
There we go then.
Well, I take that back.
Justin, thanks for sharing the story with us, and thanks for being part of Hanson McLain. And unfortunately, we are out of time. The red flashing light means we got to go. You can always get a podcast of this program, HansonMcLain.com. Join us next week for Hanson McLain's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLain Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.